blood. Chapter 5. At the edge of town, Kenny stopped his wagon in the shade of a tall oak tree growing next to the smithy. He lashed his horse to a hitching post next to a trough filled with water so the animal could drink and cool itself. The July sun beat down relentlessly, the sun's glare making the stifling heat unbearable for both horse and man. The blacksmith, Ray Thomas, looked up from his work and nodded at Kenny, giving the piece of steel he was shaping a final few blows before he set it back into the bed of red-hot coals next to his anvil. The shop wasn't his primary workshop, but a smaller and simpler setup that he used to escape the hottest months of the year. While his workshop, adjacent to Pastor Eisenbach's church near the town square, was much larger, the brick building was a literal oven during the summer if the forge was fired up. The small summer workshop consisted of a forge, bellows, anvil, and other paraphernalia of the trade housed underneath an open pavilion. The pavilion was open-walled and provided shade, letting the wind blow through when they were lucky enough to have it. Ray walked the short distance over to the wagon and gave Kenny a firm handshake.
"Hot enough for you, Kenny?"
Ray asked.
"It's a real scorcher today," Kenny said. "I don't know how you can work around that forge in this heat."
Ray pushed his gray hair out of the way and wiped the sweat from his forehead, chuckling.
"You know, that is hard to believe, but before everything went to hell, I used to wear a sweater to the office in the middle of July because my co-workers kept the air conditioner set to 64 degrees. Can you imagine that? I don't mind the heat. You get used to it after a while, and it's not so bad as long as you stay hydrated. Besides, at my age, the heat is easier to handle than the cold. I pity you guys that go out hunting and foraging on a cold winter day while I'm snug and warm working by my forge. To each their own, I guess. But let's get down to business. How can I help you, Kenny?"
Ray asked.
"My plow broke, split clean in half earlier today. Can you take a look at it and see if you can fix it?"
The blacksmith walked around to the back of the wagon and looked over the plow, running his finger along the seam of the torn metal.
"Wow, this is a really old plow. An antique by far. That blade was a solid piece of steel. How did you manage to do that?"
"I plowed through a hornet's nest in the ground. I got stung, and then the wasps stung the mules. When they ran away, the plow got caught on a rock and sheared in half."
Ray leaned in close to the plow blade, squinting as he inspected the metal.
"That shouldn't have happened, but I see the problem. Most of the metal is solid, but there is a rust line running down the center of the blade. You can see the weak spot if you look closely. A hairline fracture down the blade. This old plow must have sat in a barn somewhere, and a crack in the roof allowed water to drip down on the same spot over a long period of time. I can fix it, but it will take some time to pull the plow apart and forge weld it back together."
"Great. How much will it cost, though? I'm a little short of money right now,"
Kenny said. Ray gave a wide smile.
"I can't remember the last time anybody paid me in cold hard cash. I just shoed a horse for old man Elliot, and he paid me with a sack of tobacco twists. Barter is fine, as long as it's not turnips. I hate turnips. What do you have to trade?"
"Honestly, I don't have much. If I have to pay for something, I usually trade work. I'm too busy right now to offer to trade labor, though. I really need to have this plow back so I can finish turning over a new section of pasture. Work is stacking up, and I've got too many commitments. I can't wait any longer to start felling timber or firewood, or it won't be seasoned before winter. It's not just for me, either. I've got three elderly couples that helped us buy the mule team that I still have to fell and split wood for. After that, the harvest will be here, and I won't have any free time until winter,"
Kenny said.
"I understand your problem. Too much work and too little time. Tell you what, my house needs a new roof, but it can wait until next summer. It's a lot of work hauling wooden shingles up and tacking them down. If you can help me out with that, I'll take care of this plow for you. Fair enough?"
Ray asked.
"I owe you a big one, Ray. Thanks a billion. I won't forget it,"
Kenny said.
"You're stretching yourself too thin, Kenny. But I guess we all are these days, aren't we? Come back around dusk. I should have it done by then."
"Thanks again," Kenny said.
A loud whistle sounded a short distance away, interrupting their conversation. A set of railroad tracks ran through the east end of town, and he spotted a billowing cloud of steam rising into the air above the buildings, approaching quickly. As the steam-powered locomotive drew close, the noise from the powerful engine was nearly ear-splitting. Although it only pulled 10 or so boxcars behind it, it was still an impressive sight. a reminder that things weren't always going to be the way they were now. Eventually, the world would catch back up to where it had been.
Dang it all, of course they come today. Kenny, can you go down and see what they have for sale? I'm always on the lookout for new tools. See if they have any punches, tongs, metal clamps, that sort of thing.
Sure thing, Ray. I'll take a look.
Kenny strolled over to the train station where men were busy unpacking crates and boxes from the train. Two men in Martin Hale Security Company uniforms gave him a menacing look as he walked past. The security men were a recent addition to the weekly train crew, brought on board by the railroad company's new owner. Traders busily laid out their wares onto large pieces of cloth on the ground. A few feet from the traders, a dentist unfolded a metal deck chair that now served as his dentist's chair. A large circular mirror was attached to the chair by a telescoping arm. It reflected sunlight into the patient's mouth for the dentist to work by. The dentist produced a mask connected to a small bottle of nitrous oxide, a rare commodity that was sure to get him some work if anyone could afford the gas. Painkillers were in short supply these days, and everyone feared the dentist's chair. A shiver ran down Kenny's spine as he eyed the leather straps on the arms of the chair, used to keep patients who couldn't afford the gas still during dental procedures. He made a mental note to put extra effort into brushing his teeth when he got home. Kenny passed by the dentist, a tinker, and an Appalachian Express railroad worker selling bulk items like salt and flour. The man yelled out and hawked his goods. The items were priced well beyond what anyone around here was willing to pay for them. Kenny looked around, but didn't see any metalworking tools, and stopped in front of a man in dirty overalls selling trays of different seedlings and crops to hear what he had to offer.
"Listen, folks, I've got sweet potatoes, rhubarb starters, and raspberry rhizomes, all sorts of edible and useful plants. Come take a look. Get them while you can. I've got seeds and sprouts of nearly every kind of plant this side of the Mississippi."
Just then, shouting erupted, and a scuffle broke out a few feet away. A man wearing a convict's striped outfit, his face covered in soot, was trying to pull himself away from the guards.
"Let me go! I didn't do anything!"
"Get back on the train, you piece of trash! We'll take you back to where you belong," one of the men said, twisting the convict's arm behind his back.
"Help! Somebody help me! I didn't do anything!"
the convict yelled. One of the Martin Hale men punched the convict in the face, and then drove his knee into the man's belly, sending him to the ground, heaving for air. As the convict rolled on the ground, grasping at his belly, he made eye contact with Kenny and reached his hand out.
"Kenny, please, help me!"
the convict yelled. Confused, Kenny did a double take, trying to picture what the man would look like without the soot covering his face. He thought he recognized the voice. It sounded like his soon-to-be brother-in-law. Sarah's brother.
"Andrew?"
Kenny surged forward. One of the Martin Hale men turned and pushed him away roughly.
"Get back. This is none of your business. He's an escaped convict. A stowaway."
The second Martin Hale guard kicked the man in the ribs, eliciting a groan of pain.
"Andrew?"
Kenny asked, stepping closer so that he could get a better look. The man's skin was covered in soot. He looked like he'd been to hell and back. There was no mistaking those eyes, though. It was Sarah's brother. But what was he doing here? He was supposed to be with the caravan. And why was he wearing a prisoner's outfit? Why was he hiding on the train? None of this made any sense.
"Andrew, where is Sarah?"
Kenny asked. The Martin Hale guard pushed Kenny back again and raised his fist.
"Now we'll warn you again. Back off and mind your own business, or you'll find yourself in chains just like him, or worse."
"Now, that wasn't very friendly. It almost sounded like a threat,"
a voice said behind Kenny. Kenny turned, relieved to see Dutch Jansen. The Joker's hangman, second in command, was approaching with two of the club members in tow. Strutting up confidently, the three men looked rough and tough in their motorcycle jackets and the attitude written all over their faces. Dutch moved to stand next to Kenny and put his arm around him in a friendly manner while his two underlings pushed past the Martin Hale security man and wrestled with the other guard to pull Andrew from his grasp.
"Biker trash, this isn't any of your business either. Get out of here before we get the law involved,"
the Martin Hale guard said. Dutch gave a gruff laugh and held the breast of his leather jacket up, showing off the deputy's star pinned just above the wings and skull of a motorcycle manufacturer's patch.
Well, I've got some bad news for you. We are the law here, and you just threatened one of our citizens. Now, what is this all about? Who's that man you've got there?
An escaped convict. He must have got on board and stowed away at the prison. We're going to take him back.
Dutch, it's me, Andrew Young. Don't let them take me back there. I didn't do anything. They put me in a camp and gave me...
Shut up, you, or I'll shut you up for good,
the Martinhale guard snarled. He backed up a few feet to stand beside the other guard and slid his hand down to rest on the pistol in a holster at his hip. The other guard did the same.
Son, you don't want to pull that pistol on me. Trust me. Now I want to hear what your prisoner has to say. He's one of our people, so you've got some explaining to do if you want to convince me to let you take him. What was he convicted of? By whose authority? When?
Dutch asked, incredulity in his voice.
Why, trash biker, you don't know who you're fooling with.
The guard flipped the leather catch off of his holster.
I won't warn you again. You do not want to pull that pistol out in my town. Andrew, go ahead and tell us what happened,
Dutch said. Andrew got to his feet, his hands shaking, unsteady on his feet. He seemed confused and terrified.
What happened to you? How did you get here?
Kenny asked.
I hid in the coal bin. They drugged me. I have to get...
Andrew, why aren't you with the caravan?
Dutch asked. Andrew looked up at Dutch and then to Kenny. His mouth hung open, his lower lip quivering, and then he seemed to gather himself.
The caravan was attacked. They killed my mom and dad. Sarah, is she alive?
Kenny yelled. His hands went clammy all of a sudden, and his vision narrowed as if he were in a tunnel.
He's a liar and a murderer, and he's coming with us, the Martinhale man yelled. He killed everyone in that caravan. We dropped him off at the prison a few stops back. You can't believe anything he says. Now, we're taking him back with us, and there is not a damn thing you can do to stop us.
With that, the railroad man pulled his pistol out, leveling it at Dutch. The other security man followed suit. No sooner had their pistols left their holsters than two shots rang out from the rooftop of a nearby building. The Martinhale guards dropped to the ground, dead.
Stupid! I told you not to pull that pistol,
Dutch said.
You should have listened to me.
He turned and waved his hand at the three bikers concealed on the rooftop a short distance away, giving them the all clear. Staring speechlessly at the dead Martinhale guards on the ground, Kenny felt his tunnel vision close to an even tighter field of vision in front of him. A feeling of disbelief took hold of him. This couldn't be happening. There had to be some kind of mistake. He'd felt this same feeling of anxiety and dislocation when the EMP hit. He had to get a grip on himself and deal with the situation, but things were happening too fast. He couldn't process at all. Where was Sarah? Was she still alive? Chapter 6 Andrew was in a frantic state. His fists were clenched into tight balls and his eyes darted about nervously, as if he expected the Martinhale security men to rise from the dead and seize him. Andrew stammered, unable to get a complete sentence out. It was hard to believe this was the same strong, dependable young man that left Wheeler with the caravan weeks ago. He was a complete wreck.
Whoa, take a deep breath. Slow down and start from the beginning,
Dutch said, setting his hand on Andrew's shoulder. Dutch led him to a shady spot beneath a tree and shooed away the crowd that had gathered, encouraging Andrew to continue with his story.
You're all right now, Andrew. We won't let them take you. You're safe. Go ahead and tell us what happened.
After the crowd dispersed, Andrew took a deep breath and seemed to collect himself.
We were almost home. Everything was going good until then. We sold almost all of the liquor to a riverboat captain at Huntington. He paid us in gold coins, more than we expected. Then we left Huntington and went to Malden and bought as much salt as we could carry back with us on the wagons. Everybody in the caravan was so happy. The trip was a success. We had some gold and even some whiskey left over after buying the salt. We'd just left Malden and were on our way home. It was getting dark out, so we camped a few miles outside of town. That's where they got us. They ambushed us. I think there were four or five of them. They shot the Joker's hangman guards while we were all eating supper around the campfire. We never had a chance to fight back. Damn it, Andrew! What about Sarah? Where is she? Is she alive?
Kenny asked, unable to contain himself any longer.
She's alive, but I don't know where they took her. Those men stole the horses and anything else they wanted from the caravan and then tied us up. They threw Sarah and me over saddles and brought us to a building somewhere. I had a bag over my head. I don't know where it was, but it was dark and I just don't know. They took Sarah away somewhere and then they put me in these clothes and chained me up with some other prisoners in the boxcar of a train. They made me drink something that tasted foul. A drug, I think. It made me sick. I don't know what it was. I was so high and jittery, it was terrible. I couldn't tell where I was until the train stopped and they unloaded me at a prison. There was a fight between a prisoner and the guards when they were unloading us. While the guards were distracted, I buried myself in the engine's coal bin. I didn't know where the train would take me. I just wanted to get out of there, Andrew said.
Tears streamed down his face, washing the coal dust away in streaks.
Kenny, we have to find my sister. When did this happen? How long ago?
Kenny asked.
2 days ago? Maybe three? I don't know. It's hard to tell. My mind's still hazy from the drugs.
You were smart to hide and get out of there. We're lucky you made it back, or we might never have found out about this. Where'd this happen? The ambush. Can you show me exactly where you were on a map?
Dutch asked.
I think so. I know which road we took after Malden, but everything after the ambush is foggy,
Andrew said. Kenny's chest felt like it would cave in. It was so difficult to breathe. All he could think about was Sarah, worried that she was hurt or in pain somewhere. He felt helpless and out of control. Where was she? How would he find her? He would go to the last place that Andrew still knew his location. After that, he just had to have faith that he could pick up her trail.
Let's get a map. Show me where you think the ambush happened. I'm going after her,
Kenny said.
Slow down a minute, Kenny,
Dutch said.
You can't just rush over there without planning.
No, I'm not waiting. No planning or thinking. I can do all of that in the saddle. Andrew's going to show me where they were on a map, and then I'm going right now to get her back. I'm stopping at home to get guns and supplies. I'm sure my mother will want to come with me, too. If you can send someone with us, I would appreciate the help. But I can't wait. Sarah's in danger,
Kenny said, his dry throat making his voice crack.
This couldn't have happened at a worse time. I just got a note from Chief Howell this morning. He's gone off somewhere, but he didn't say where. Roy has half of the Joker's hangmen out on a supply mission 100 miles from here. Your father is away fighting a forest fire? With 4 of my best men killed in the ambush, I'll be damned if we can handle any more trouble here in town than what we just had. We're spread thin, Kenny. I don't know how many men we can send to look into this right now,
Dutch said.
I'm going to go with you, Andrew said. You're in no shape to go. Dutch, just tell the chief and my dad what happened when they get back. My mom and I can take care of ourselves. Andrew said there were only 4 of them. They got the drop on the caravan, but they won't catch us with our guard down. We can handle ourselves.
I just wish you would wait a bit. Another day won't kill...
Rage filled him. What didn't Dutch understand? This was Sarah, the woman he loved.
No, I'm going now, he snapped.
Dutch drew back defensively and put his open hands in the air.
Okay. I didn't mean anything by it, Kenny. I just don't want you to put yourself in danger, too. I'll let your father and Chief Howell know what happened. Come over to the shop and we'll put you on a fresh horse, so you can ride hard and get home fast.
Thanks, Dutch,
Kenny said. Kicking himself for letting Sarah go with a caravan, he stormed over to the motorcycle club following Dutch. He would go through hell and back to find Sarah and bring her home. The thought of something happening to her sickened him and filled him with a burning rage. Those men. If they'd laid a hand on her, he'd kill them. The thought of losing her, he just couldn't lose her. His feet were ahead of his mind and he found himself almost at the club, leaving Dutch far behind as he helped Andrew limp along. He wanted to get the horse and get out of here, now. They couldn't wait for reinforcements. Sarah's life was on the line. By the time they got a posse together of people that were worth bringing, it would be too late. Besides, a large posse would alert the highwaymen. They might slip away and escape capture. He would go home and get his mother. She was the only one who would understand how he felt and understand what he needed to do. She was the only help he needed. Danny was old enough to watch over the farm while they were gone. His mind raced, creating a list of all the things he would need to bring. Rifles, pistols, ammo, knives, outdoor gear, and oats for the horses. It was better if just his mother and he went after Sarah. A woman and her son traveling through the countryside wouldn't draw as much attention as a big group of heavily armed men thundering down the road. It would be obvious that group was a posse in pursuit of the caravan's raiders. They would keep a low profile and be on the lookout for trouble. The highwaymen were probably preying on easy targets, like the caravan. Four guards hadn't been enough. He needed to go to the site of the ambush and see for himself what had happened. There had to be some clue left behind as to where the bandits had gone. The stolen horses would leave hoofprints behind, and Kenny could track anything with four legs.
"Are you sure about this, Kenny? What if you get there and you find more outlaws than you can handle?"
Dutch asked.
"If we're outgunned, we won't engage them. We'll go and get help from a nearby town. We'll find local law enforcement and ask for help. Nobody likes highwaymen."
"Fair enough. I feel terrible about this, Kenny, but Chief Howell made me promise I wouldn't budge an inch from Wheeler while he's gone. If we left the town unprotected and something happened here, he'd never forgive me,"
Dutch said.
"I understand. This isn't your fault, Dutch. Take care of Andrew and stop by our farm if you can to check in on Danny while my mother and I are gone."
Kenny followed Dutch through the stables next to the motorcycle club. Dutch led a mare out of a stall and handed the reins to him. The mare pulled at the reins and stomped.
"Watch her. She's feisty, but fast as hell. She'll get you home in no time,"
Dutch said.
"About your brother, I'll do even better than stopping by. We'll get Andrew patched up and I'll bring him up to the farm. I'll find somebody from town to watch over the two of them while you and your mother are gone. Stay here and I'll fetch the map,"
Dutch said. A moment later, he emerged from the club with a folding map in hand and spread it out across the saddle.
"Where were you attacked, Andrew?"
Dutch asked.
"There's Malden. Let's see. It was right here, just before this fork in the road. There's a big field with three old grain silos on the left side of the road next to a burned-out farmhouse. One of the silos is half-collapsed, and the field backs up to the woods. We camped right there,"
Andrew said.
"You can't miss it."
"You're sure, Andrew?"
Dutch asked, folding the map back up.
"Positive. That's where they ambushed us."
Kenny took the map from Dutch, stuck his foot in the stirrup, and pulled himself into the saddle. Without a second of hesitation, he spurred the horse on, galloping full speed down Wheeler's main street towards his homestead. The mare was faster than any horse he'd ridden before, and he clung tightly to the pommel to keep his seat. He would find Sarah and bring her home safely. God help the men who killed her parents and took her away. His nostrils flared as he imagined Sarah's pain looking on as her parents were killed in front of her. God help those bastards when he found them.
Chapter 7 Chief Howell shoveled the last bit of loose soil on top of Sutherland's grave. The soil was dry, and a film of dust coated his sweat-soaked shirt as a gust of wind picked it up and scattered the dirt about. He stepped into the shade of a tall spruce tree to get out of the sun's heat. Drenched with sweat and exhausted, his arms felt like rubber. Even with the help of the farmer who had happened by and pitched in to dig the grave, Howell was out of steam. It felt like an insult to Jerry, being buried in a grave with no stone marker on the side of the road far from his home. Men like him, that had served as long as he had, should be surrounded by friends, family, and fellow officers. Put to rest in a more deserving location, with flowers and fanfare. The grim reality was that if they didn't bury him quickly, his body would soon begin to decompose and present a health risk for others. Nobody embalmed the dead these days, and in this heat, there was no way to transport his body home in a state fit for burial. The EMP had stripped away all of man's illusions about death. You said your piece, and then you picked up and moved on. Hearts would heal with time, but only if they were connected to a body with a full belly, and that wasn't something that anybody took for granted anymore.
"Thank you for your help. I'll say a few words for him," Howell said,
passing his shovel back to the white-haired old farmer who had stopped to offer his assistance. The man bowed his head and clasped his hands respectfully, waiting for Chief Howell to speak.
"You deserve better than this, Jerry. You were a good friend, and you'll be missed. The savage that did this to you is dead. I'll get the son of a bitch who paid the killer next. Rest in peace. Amen."
The old farmer glanced up at him under arched eyebrows and then carried the shovels back to his cart. Howell climbed into the saddle and, with one final look back at Jerry's grave, spurred his horse down the road. The image of his friend's gaping, tongueless mouth stuck in his mind. Howell gritted his teeth and could barely see straight. He felt like a pot that was ready to boil over. Hanging a man was bad enough, but cutting his tongue out had been a clear message to whoever found his body. Speak out against Tweed, and this could happen to you next. Sheriff Sutherland had been a vocal opponent of Tweed, a thorn in his side. As far as he was concerned, it removed all speculation about Warden Dodson's untimely death. Even without hearing the details of how he was killed, he would be surprised at any cause of death other than murder at this point. Tweed was clearly bold. This was more than a corruption investigation now. It was a murder investigation, and it was personal. Jerry had been brutalized and murdered, and Howell would make sure Tweed paid for it. No matter what the cost, he would find the evidence he needed to make the charges against Tweed stick and bring down his empire. Or he'd kill him. Maybe both. Chapter 8. A pair of grain silos towered over a pasture that had long since gone to the weeds. Ruins of a third silo, half the height of the others, leaned heavily to one side, the upper half of the structure reduced to a pile of loose bricks around the base of the silo. The ruins of a burnt-out farmhouse sat a short distance away. At the edge of the field, Kenny looked up and down the highway, looking for signs of danger before he left the road. It was empty, with nothing but the shimmer of heat dancing just above the hot asphalt as far as the eye could see. Kenny's shirt was soaked through with sweat, and his legs chafed from the saddle. The horses, too, had a thick layer of sweat that had foamed into a lather beneath their harnesses. His mother was stoic, but he knew she must be feeling the heat as well. They were all overheated and exhausted, having ridden through the night by the light of the full moon to reach the site of the ambush. And now they were here. This was definitely the place. It was unmistakable from Andrew's description. Kenny took a drink of water from his canteen, trying to ease the lump in his throat. As they drew closer to the edge of the forest where the caravan had camped, a foul stench reached his nose like the sickening smell of roadkill after a few days baking on the pavement. Kenny spit and fought back the urge to vomit.
"Let me go down and see what happened, Kenny. You don't need to see this," Amy said.
Kenny shook his head vigorously.
"No, I'm going to."
Amy sighed and slid down off of her horse. She brought a rag out of her saddlebag and wrapped it around the lower half of her face. Kenny followed suit, taking a handkerchief from his pocket. He wrapped it around his face, bunching it up under his nose and mouth to dampen the foul odor. It didn't help much. Four bloated bodies sat around a long dead campfire in a ring of stones. He knew they were the caravan guards by the leather jackets they wore, the Joker's hangman patch visible on the back of one of the men lying face down in the grass. The bodies of the rest of the caravan team lay scattered about the wagons. The smell was intense and eye-watering. Kenny retched and doubled over, ripping the mask off of his face, unable to hold back his stomach any longer. He heaved repeatedly, keeping his eyes sealed shut until his stomach finally calmed. When he stood up again, he saw that his mother was in a similar state, and he turned away from the sight to prevent his stomach from revolting again. He looked at the bodies, surveying the area, terrified that Andrew had been wrong and that he would find Sarah lying there, bloated and disfigured like the other bodies. The wagons were full of large blocks of salt. They were likely too bulky and heavy for the thieves to carry away. Everything else of value had been taken. The personal belongings of the caravan team had been thoroughly ransacked, their suitcases and travel chests tossed open and contents scattered across the field. The horses and mules were long gone. Amy joined them in the search, but neither of them found any sign of Sarah. He wasn't sure if he should feel relieved that she wasn't dead, or dismayed that she was gone, kidnapped. Helplessness filled him. Where was she? What had happened to her?
Mom, she's not here. She's gone. What if we don't...
Don't you dare give up hope, Kenny Miller. We'll find her. We're both tired and hot, so let's slow down and think this through. Wyatt taught you everything he knew about tracking. You can track a deer across miles of woods with little more than a broken twig or a drop of blood to go by. The highwaymen took all the horses with them, so it should be easy enough for you to follow their trail. Get to it, son,
Amy said. Kenny mopped the sweat from his forehead and took a deep breath, trying to center himself. She was right. He couldn't let his fear of what might have happened to Sarah cloud his mind. He scanned the wilted green grass and patches of brown dirt in the pasture, looking for signs of what direction the highwayman had traveled. He found several sets of deep hoof marks that had hardened some time ago in the soil, showing where several horses had traveled. The marks led to a wide trail leading through the woods beyond the wagons.
Here. They left this trail through the woods. The marks are a few weeks old.
Good job, Kenny. Let's go.
He mounted his horse and urged the animal on down the trail. It was wide and well-traveled, and the deep hoof marks were easy to follow in the soft soil, even at a canter. He followed the path as it meandered up and down the mountains, slowing his horse as they traversed tight switchbacks with sharp cliffs along the side of the trail. They traveled for a long while before they let the horses rest and drink water from a stream. The shade and water seemed to reinvigorate the horses, and they started back down the trail. 2 hours later, the trail emptied out into a pasture, and Kenny tracked the hoof marks until he came to the edge of a two-lane highway. The trail went cold, and he searched along both sides of the highway, looking for any sign that the highwayman left the road again. The sun was low on the horizon, the clouds in the sky fiery red. It was going to be dark soon, and hard to see anything from atop his horse. He dismounted and led the steed as he walked along the roadside, desperate for any evidence of the group. Which way had they gone? Was he even going the right direction down the highway? What if they went the other way?
Kenny, it is time to call it a day. These horses need rest, or it's going to kill them. We need rest and food, too. We need our wits about us if we're going to find the highwaymen and get the drop on them.
He didn't want to stop looking, but he knew she was right. There wasn't any point in looking any further tonight. They were both spent, and they didn't want to run into the highwaymen in this condition. Kenny bit his lip, fighting back tears. Sarah was out there somewhere, terrified and alone. He spotted a small town a short distance ahead and rode until they reached it. The town, if it could even be called that, consisted of 10 or 11 buildings clumped together along the side of the road. A run-down motel advertised rooms available for rent. Kenny slid down from the saddle and lashed his horse to a tethering post out front, then went inside the motel office. A shriveled old man sat behind the desk, elbows on the counter and his head propped up in his hands, snoring loudly. Amy cleared her throat a few times until the man lifted his head and rubbed his eyes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear you come in. Not many customers these days. How can I help you?
We need a room for the night and somewhere to stable and feed our horses, Amy said.
Not a problem. We can take care of both. I take gold, silver, food, and just about anything else as payment. What have you got?
Amy pulled a couple of silver coins out of her pouch and placed them on the counter, adding coins until the old man's face turned upward in a smile.
Okay, folks, you got yourself a room. Here's your room key.
The old man turned and yelled through the open doorway to a back room of the office.
Max, get out here. We've got customers.
A middle-aged man, clearly the old man's son, came through the doorway, yawning.
These two have horses that need tending to. See that you give the horses a good rub down before you feed them. They look like they've been on the road for a while, and I'm sure their horses are run down.
The younger man nodded sleepily and went outside.
Is there anywhere to get something to eat around here?
Amy asked.
Sure is.
If you take a ride out of the front door, not a half a block down the street, there's a bar called McFlynn's. The food is good, but mind you, keep away from their liquor. That rot gut they pass off as moonshine will make you go blind.
Thanks for the warning, Amy said.
Kenny opened the door and then followed his mother down the street towards the bar. It was easy to spot. All of the other buildings were boarded up. McFlynn's was the only building with an open door, and there were two kerosene lanterns hanging outside, ready to light up the approaching night. Kenny exchanged a glance with his mother. He was willing to bet the place had more roaches than paying customers. Inside, the room was empty except for a man sitting at a table near the window, and a weasel-like bartender standing behind the counter, wiping the countertop. He looked up as Kenny pulled out a bar stool and sat down.
Can I help you folks?
What do you have to eat? Amy asked.
We've got potatoes cooked any way you like, as long as it's fried, and fish. Can I interest you in some of our locally produced moonshine? Clean as a whistle, made using water from a mountain stream not far from here,
the bartender said in his weasel-thin voice. He brought a jug out from beneath the counter and poured a sample of the moonshine into a cup and pushed it across the bar to Amy. She sniffed at the cup and recoiled. Amy picked up a spoon off the counter and poured a spoonful, then dug in her pocket for something.
It's a shame what some people try to pass off as moonshine these days, Amy said.
She lit a match and set the flame to the spoonful of liquor. The flame burned bright red for a moment and then cleared to a blue flame.
Lead burns red, and that means you're dead, Amy said flatly.
I don't understand,
the bartender said, his face scrunched up in confusion.
There's lead in this moonshine. The moonshine was made in a still that has lead in it, most likely an old car radiator. You keep selling this stuff to your customers, and you won't have any customers left to sell to.
The bartender's mouth hung wide open for a moment, then he jabbed the cork back into the bottle.
So you know a little bit about moonshine, eh? I'll tell you what, I happen to have some high-quality moonshine. Just came into it. Top-of-the-shelf stuff. I was going to keep it all to myself, but for the right price, I'll make an exception.
The bartender disappeared into a back room and then came back with a new bottle of moonshine. Kenny looked at his mother in surprise, but her face remained an unreadable mask. It was Wheeler moonshine. He knew it as soon as the man came through the door with it. Every bottle was painted with the same fancy text and a mural, screen-printed onto the bottles painstakingly. A hang tag dangled from the jug's handle, a 6-digit hand-printed number written on it. The tags were used by Wheeler's distillery to track the bottles as they left. The tag number was recorded in town and indicated who the bottle was released to, and hence who was responsible for the sale. Everybody in Wheeler participated in the distillation process, whether it was providing grain, labor, or washing and painting the bottles. Every citizen also sold the end product, and they were paid a commission on the number of bottles sold, as evidenced by the number of tags they brought back with their profits. The hang tag was still on the bottle, meaning the bottle of moonshine wasn't sold. It was stolen. Kenny pushed himself out of his chair and was about to confront the man, but his mother kicked him hard in the shin. He sat back down quickly. Whatever she was doing, he would have to just go along with it. The bartender poured out a shot of the liquor into a fresh glass and scooted it over the counter. Amy smelled the small glass and downed the shot, then gave a wincing nod of approval.
That is good. Do you have any more bottles of that? I'll pay top dollar for shine that good.
Oh, I'm not sure I'd be willing to sell all of it. Like I said, it really is special moonshine, and I was hoping to save it for myself.
Amy reached into her pocket and produced a sack of coins, hefting it for emphasis. The coins clinked together loudly in the still of the small bar. She untied the bag and spilled a few gold coins into her open palm, smiling at the barkeep.
I think you'll find him quite generous.
With a nervous glance around the barkeep lifted the hinged countertop and tilted his head to the side.
Follow me. I've got several more gallons in the back.
Kenny followed his mother, who was on the bartender's heels as they went into the back of the bar. Shelves full of various liquors and other empty bottles lined the walls. 3 crates full of Wheeler corn whiskey and moonshine sat on the floor in plain view. As soon as the door closed behind him, Kenny shoved the man up against the wall, eliciting a shrill squeal from the man.
Take whatever you want. Please don't kill me, the bartender cried out.
We're not here to rob you, Kenny said. Where did you get this whiskey? Tell me your...
Amy winked at Kenny, and then put her hand on his arm, pulling him away from the bartender.
Whoa, slow down there, son. This gentleman doesn't know who we are or why we're here. Let's explain the facts to him first. He looks like a reasonable person to me, she said.
She went on to explain a different version of the caravan robbery story, selectively retelling it as a simple whiskey heist and leaving out the horrific murders.
Now that we're able to talk in private, why don't you tell me where you got the moonshine from? I know you didn't buy it, and I'll tell you why. This whiskey is made in my hometown. I've personally stirred the mash, run the distiller, and stuffed a cork in hundreds of these bottles. See that hang tag on the bottle? If you bought this from a legitimate seller, they would have taken the tag with them. They get paid a commission for each tag they turn in. None of these hang tags have been taken. Those crates you have there, those are worth 2 months of wages. Now, answer me truthfully. Did you steal it yourself, or did you buy it from someone else?
Amy asked.
What do you mean? I don't have any idea what you're talking about. I had no idea it was stolen. How could I? I bought it from the same men I buy my other moonshine from. They made it right here in town.
Liar! Amy yelled. No, you didn't. You knew something was different about this moonshine. You must have suspected it was stolen, or else you would have it out front, displayed in the bar. Instead, you kept it back here, hidden from sight. Now, tell me where you got it,
Amy said.
I'm losing my patience with you.
I didn't do anything wrong. I don't know where it came from,
the bartender said, whimpering. Amy sighed.
Kenny, I don't think he can hear very well. Let's see if I can help him hear a little better.
She seized the little bartender by both ears and pulled him up by them until he screamed with pain.
Okay, all right, I'll tell you.
The little bartender seemed to deflate.
I bought it from a man who comes in here sometimes.
What does he look like? How long ago did he sell it to you?
Kenny asked.
Look, you can't tell him I told you any of this, all right? He'll kill me if he knows I ratted him out.
We won't say a word. Now tell me everything you know about him.
His name's John. He's tall, I don't know, about 30 years old. He has a tattoo on his right forearm, a snake wrapped around a dagger. He doesn't live around here, I know that much. I don't know where he works, but I've seen him come in here with railroad men before. He was right out...
No, that's all I know,
the bartender said. Sweat poured from his pasty forehead, and his hands shook.
What? What aren't you telling us?
Kenny demanded.
No, I can't tell you. He'll kill me if I tell you.
Kenny slipped his skinning knife out of its sheath and, quicker than the bartender could react, pressed the point of the knife into the man's fat cheek, stopping just short of drawing blood.
The man that sold you the whiskey did more than just steal it. He ambushed a group of people not far from here. Somebody kidnapped my fiancée. He and his men killed her mother and father and other people from our town. I don't care about the stolen whiskey. You're a chicken shit, but you're not a cold-blooded murderer. I just want the man that sold it to you. I need to find him quickly, and I'm getting impatient,
Kenny said. The bartender's lower lip trembled.
Okay. He's out front, sitting at the table by the window. Please don't tell him that I was the one that ratted him out.
Amy let go of the bartender and rushed towards the door leading to the bar. Kenny was hot on her heels. He tucked his knife back into its sheath and pulled his pistol out of its holster. When they came through the door, the man's table was empty. Kenny burst through the front door, swiveling his head about, trying to locate the man. Off to his right, a horse beat a hasty retreat down the town's main street, its shoes clopping loudly on the pavement. His mother pulled her pistol and fired several shots after the man. Kenny calmly grabbed his rifle from the scabbard on his horse and brought it to his shoulder. He took aim through the iron sights at the fleeing figure on the horse and calmed his breathing down into a steady flow of air. In and out, he became one with the rifle. The target became the only thing in his awareness, and his mind ran calculations, compensating for the distance. 100 yards, 110 yards, 120 yards. He squeezed the trigger. The rifle reported. 120 yards away, the horse stumbled and crashed to the ground, sending its rider flying through the air, The horse and man screamed in pain as they hit the ground. Running up to the man, Kenny saw that his leg was bent the wrong way, twisted underneath his body. The horse whinnied in pain, bleeding from a gut wound. His mother put her pistol to the horse's head and ended the suffering animal's misery.
"Who are you?"
Kenny demanded, kicking the man's arm away as he reached for the pistol at his belt. Kenny stripped the gun from its holster.
"Go to hell? What do you people want?"
the man asked defiantly. Kenny kneeled down and set his palm on the man's broken leg, then put pressure on the wound. The man screamed in agony, flailing his arms against the ground.
"Stop! Stop!"
"Who are you?"
Kenny asked.
"Bill Cheswold,"
he said in a raspy voice.
"You must already know who we are and why we're here, otherwise you wouldn't have left the bar in such a hurry. So you know I'm in no mood to mess around. You killed some of our friends and ransacked our caravan. You took a girl and her brother. Where is she? What did you do with her?"
Kenny shouted.
I don't know anything about..."
Kenny bore down his entire weight on the man's broken leg. The man screamed in pain, his eyes wide as saucers.
"Narai, stop! Please!"
he screamed. He turned his head to Amy, pleading.
"Please make him stop!"
"You'd better tell him what he wants to know. You took away his fiancée and killed her family. If you think you'll find pity or mercy from me, you're sorely mistaken. Tell my son the truth, or he'll make you talk, one way or the other,"
Amy said. The man seemed to finally resign himself to his situation.
I was part of a group of guys. We used to stop people from out of town and take their stuff. A few months ago, the railroad company started paying us to harass traders that weren't using the railroad to ship their merchandise. We stopped your people and took the liquor. Then they left. That's all I know," he said.
Amy gave him a withering look.
"You'd better come out with all of it, or I'm going to walk away. I can't stand cruelty, so I won't want to see what my son is going to do to you."
A few seconds of silence passed, and then Amy got to her feet.
"Do what you have to, Kenny. Just wait until I'm back in the bar so I don't have to hear it."
Wait, please don't let him,"
the man pleaded.
"Where is she? What did you do with her? Her brother ended up in a prison, so where is she?"
Kenny asked.
"I took her up to Charleston and sold her. There's a warehouse by the train station that I take them to, an old soda manufacturing warehouse,"
the man stammered.
"There's a guy there, pays good money for women. I don't know his name, but he's got a big scar on his face. I don't know what he does with them. I swear, I didn't..."
"All right, that's all we need to know. Did you kill anybody? Any part of our caravan?"
Amy asked.
No, I swear I didn't do..."
Kenny pressed down hard on the man's leg, infuriated by his lies.
Okay, stop, please. I shot two of the bikers and some other guy. That's all, I swear. I didn't kill any women or anybody else."
"Let's go, Kenny. How far is Charleston from here? There's enough moonlight to ride by if we stick to the highway,"
Amy said.
"Please, just let me know. I swear I'll stop."
"We can't get too far. Mom, we're not just going to leave this guy here, are we? He killed our friends. He's kidnapped people.
If you guys just let me go, I swear I'll never..."
His mother pointed her pistol at the man's head and calmly pulled the trigger, ending the man's pleas for mercy.
"Let's go, Kenny. There's no time to waste."
Chapter 9. Warden Butch Metz sat behind a wide mahogany desk with a surface so shiny and polished that a mirror image of the man shone in its reflection. His crisp uniform looked like it had been starched and ironed only an hour before. His hands were manicured, and not a hair on his head was out of place. Metz was a man who cared about appearances. And when Chief Howell walked through the door trailing dust and the smell of horse from the ride, Metz stuck his nose in the air, looking down at Howell in disdain as he carried in the crate of corn whiskey.
"Bud Howell, what brings you here?" Metz asked, with little enthusiasm. "Warden Metz, it's good to see you again," Chief Howell said cheerily. "Last time we met, you were a deputy in Greenbrier County, gunning for the sheriff's job. I was sorry to hear you didn't get it, but when I heard you'd been promoted to warden, I thought to myself, if anyone deserves it, it's Butch Metz," Chief Howell said, smiling. He'd dealt with people like Metz countless times in his career. Whatever trade it was they professed to, politics was their real game,
and politicians cared about only one thing. Themselves. Metz softened a bit and gestured toward a chair.
Please, sit down. What can I do for you?
Chief Howell set the crate down on the floor and took out one of the bottles of Wheeler Moonshine, then passed it to the warden.
I came to congratulate you on your promotion, and I brought you a little something. A goodwill gesture, if you will. I have a favor to ask, and, well, I wouldn't come asking for a favor without greasing the wheels a little first.
Metz turned the bottle of corn whiskey in the sunlight, examining the contents.
Would you look at that? Is that what I think it is?
Top-shelf corn whiskey, the best you can get for 1,000 miles. Howell removed another bottle from the crate, this one filled with a clear liquid.
And this here, this is the purest white lightning around. All natural, made with homegrown grain. This wasn't made by any old backwoods hillbilly with a radiator still. We got a large distillery operation. Everybody in town pitches in to help. All of the grain is produced locally, too. I thought you'd enjoy a little sample of our work.
Well, I'm hardly one to turn down a friendly gesture like that, the warden said.
He brought 2 glasses out of a desk drawer and set them down on the mahogany desktop.
I got a case of this for you on my horse outside. You can have one of your boys bring it up later.
Chief Howell pulled the cork out of the bottle of corn whiskey and filled the 2 glasses.
Very friendly indeed, Warden Metz said. Bottoms up.
Howell looked at the liquid in the bottom of his glass. An old hunger burned inside of him, demanding to be fed. His hand trembled slightly, and he quickly grabbed his knee so that Metz wouldn't notice. Metz looked at him expectantly, and Howell picked up the glass. If he wanted information, he couldn't turn the drink down. He'd already resolved that he would do whatever it took to bring Tweed down, but this wasn't what he had in mind. Still, Howell tilted the glass up, feeling the burn coat his throat as the liquor made its way down.
"That a boy," Metz said, sipping at his own glass before he upended it. "Goodness, that is excellent. I can't tell you some of the terrible things people pass off as liquor these days. Here, let's have another."
Metz poured 2 more glasses.
"Tell me about this favor you need help with. How can I be of service?"
Howell wrinkled his brow and made a show of seeming hesitant to ask his question. He had to be convincing for the ruse to work. If he started out asking questions about Tweed and his connection to Metz's promotion, Metz would clam up.
"I came to see if you could help me locate a young man that was sent here after a drug bust many years ago. You see, I put the young man away, and the boy never came home after prison. His father has had it out for me ever since."
That much was no lie. Roy had been a bitter adversary for many years.
"Missing, huh? Haven't heard of anything like that happening," Metz said.
He glanced out the window, as if seeking a way out of the conversation. His face flushed a bright red. Howell wondered at his reaction, but pressed on.
"Anyway, look. The long and short of it is that the man's son was incarcerated here and was supposed to get out somewhere around the time of the EMP. You know how these mountain people can get, the ones that live way back in the woods. It doesn't take much to start a blood feud over something like this. I'm just trying to find some information about the man's son I put away so as to get his family off my back," Howell said. "You take my meaning?"
"Oh, you don't have to tell me about that," Metz laughed. "I've had my share of death threats from criminals' families in my time as a deputy. I'd love to help you, but Warden Dodson left me a real mess. Tons of paperwork I still have to go through yet."
"Sorry to hear that. There can't be more paperwork than police work, right?" Chief Howell asked.
"Ha! You know what? I thought I had my hands full before. Look at all of this," he said,
pointing to the stacks of papers on his desk and boxes of paperwork on the floor.
"I'm up to my ears in paperwork. Honestly, I haven't even begun to look at all of it. This place was a mess when I got here. My hands are full with the staff and prisoners. It'll be another month before I get to any of this nonsense," Warden Metz said.
"What kind of issues do you have with the staff? Anything I can help out with?"
"Oh, you know, the usual stuff. Some of the guards smuggle in contraband, cigarettes, alcohol, that kind of thing. Everybody's trying to make an extra buck on the side," he said.
"Huh. Well, we know how that goes, don't we?" Chief Howell said. "I say, with as many prisoners as you got here, there might be some opportunities for an enterprising individual to reap the rewards. Prison is a hard place to be stuck, away from family, away from the outside world. I imagine that prisoners would pay to experience some of the creature comforts of the outside world.
The warden gave him a sly look and grinned.
Well, as you say, you know how it goes.
He tilted the bottle and poured two tall glasses of the liquor.
Say, that goes down smooth, and boy does it do the job.
The warden was drinking far too quickly. His face was flushed, and his earlier uptightness had disappeared. Years lived inside of a whiskey bottle had left the chief with an enormous tolerance for alcohol. Two glasses of corn whiskey, four shots worth in reality, had left him with a pleasant buzz. Warden Metz was a featherweight. Howell could tell just by looking at him. Maybe now was the time to press for information.
So tell me, what happened to old Warden Dotson? There were rumors going around about the peculiar circumstances of his death. How'd he die? Dodson? Well, from what I gather, it was a hunting accident. He was out alone in the woods, and his shotgun discharged while he was crossing a creek. He probably slipped in the mud. Nothing peculiar about it at all, really, Metz said.
He looked out the window again, distracted. His jaw muscles clenched, and his hands trembled as he poured another glass of moonshine for himself and tossed it back quickly. Metz was getting touchy, and Howell knew he'd better back off a little and keep him talking. An idea hit him as he watched Metz pour another glass. The man didn't know his limits. If he was unwilling to talk, it might be easier to simply drink him under the table and get the information he needed from another source. The stacks of boxes and filing cabinets filled with paperwork in the office might be chock full of information. Metz had already admitted he hadn't gone through any of it yet. He wouldn't notice any missing paperwork for quite some time, if at all.
Well, I don't put much stock in rumor anyway. I say what's done is done. We have to look forward to the future, am I right? Howell asked.
Metz perked up at the change in topic.
I'll drink to that. Say, what did you say it was you wanted from me?
Howell sipped at his whiskey, slowing his pace.
I was looking for information on that prisoner that was supposed to be released. You know what? I'm not going to make you dig through all of those papers. Tell you what, why don't you just write me a letter saying that Seth Ferguson was released on time? Maybe you could put something nice in there about him. Say he was going to travel to Ohio, where he had a girlfriend. Maybe they were going to get married. That should get the family off my back. After all, who knows what happens to these convicts after they leave here? But who cares, right?
Metz smiled.
You're a man after my own heart, Howell. Not a problem. I'll take care of that for you right now.
Swaying wildly as he backed up his chair, Metz removed a pen and official stationery from his desk and began to write the letter.
I can't thank you enough. Now listen, you think that corn whiskey is good. Wait till you try some of this corn moonshine, he said, popping the cork from the bottle.
He filled both glasses with the potent liquor.
Oh, no. Now I couldn't. Come on now. You're not going to make me drink alone, are you? What else have you got to do? You're going to do that mountain of paperwork over there?
Howell chuckled.
Well, I guess one more ain't going to kill me.
Metz propped himself up on an elbow, barely upright. He slid the note over to Howell and tilted his glass of moonshine back.
Holy hell, that burns like the dickens.
Howell kept him talking and drinking for another half an hour, nursing his own drink. It wasn't long before Warden Metz was slumped over in his chair, passed out in an alcoholic stupor. Howell waited another 15 minutes and then began to examine the boxes of files scattered around the office. The filing cabinets were filled with prisoner records, incident reports, and invoices for services provided to the facility. Howell tried to locate Seth Ferguson's prisoner record, but the file was missing. He took a stack of recent invoices and other financial records and set them aside. Wheeling the rolling desk chair carefully backward, Howell moved Metz out of the way and perused the contents of the desk. Shoved underneath a stack of papers in a drawer, a leather-bound notebook stuffed with letters caught his eye. Howell snatched it up and hid it underneath the packing material in the crate he'd used to transport the whiskey, along with all of the other paperwork he'd lifted. Howell tiptoed out the door, cautious not to rouse the snoring warden from his sleep. Howell was too drunk to read through the files and process the information right now. He'd have to take a look at it in the morning, when his head was clear. The room swaying wildly around him, he retraced his steps from the warden's office to the penitentiary's front office and signed out. With great effort, he got on his horse and rode back to the little town he'd passed through earlier in the day. Right now, he needed a hotel with a bed and some water. Lots and lots of water. Tomorrow, he could look through the documents in the crate.